Seva, welcome.
Thank you very much, Edo.
Now, the Andrea, the Sydney Olympic legend and flea in studio last week has certainly taken off.
Yeah, he's in the bank now. The response has been absolutely amazing from everyone involved in the football family in New South Wales and Australia and that. It's been unbelievable.
He certainly took us back.
No, he took us
back. Some of the 60s. Stories. Yeah. Oh, fair dinkum. All right, now today's podcast is brought to you by Ignify Legal. Buying or selling property, needing expert legal advice, contact Ian and the team on 8823 3309. Now, today's in-studio guest, Seva, a personal friend of yours.
Yep.
From a long time ago. Andy Burnell, welcome to Hedo and Seva Uncharted.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here, hearing wonderful things about the program, the podcast, and you boys are doing great, and it's an honour and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, mate. Look, it's an honour for us. When we first started the podcast, we said straight away that we wanted you on, and it's been a while in the making, but we're finally here.
Well, it's you kept your word. Yeah. Which is fantastic, and I told Seva that I'd love to help you out with it, and it seems like you don't need much help. You know, you're doing great things these days, but you know, it's fantastic what you're doing. You know, getting people in here of all kind of walks of life, like Andrea the other day, you know, helping people and spreading good word around the community. It's a fantastic thing.
Brilliant. Thanks, mate. Now, part of the reason why you are on is you're launching a book, Riding Shotgun, the autobiography of the original Wizard of Oz. Now, when this episode airs, we would have been to the book launch on Tuesday, the 27th of April, Seva.
Correct.
And Andy, it's looking like a great read.
Yeah, it's... I wrote it myself, which is I'm very proud of that, and it covers my football journey, you know, 30, 35 years ago, heading off to Europe, which was quite difficult, really, you know, with no agents and, you know, you just jump on a plane and go over, and then covers after my football career, and, you know, touches on things that, you know, previously probably were more reluctant to talk about, you know, regarding mental health these days with athletes. And, you know, what can I say? I'm very proud of it. I think it's a fantastic read. Everyone that has read it so far or had an opportunity to look at it, the feedback is fantastic. But it's the things that you know, I've achieved, the things I've gone through. I don't know for what reason, maybe destiny, I have no idea, but those things are so amazing that it's allowed me to, it's kind of made it easy to write an amazing kind of book. It's a movie. It's definitely a movie sometime.
Well, that's the thing. We've got everyone from all sports, you know, pretty much commenting and saying, look, I can't wait for this book to get out. Like, you don't have to be a football lover to be able to pick it up and enjoy it. I think it's actually going to turn into a movie. Hopefully someone picks it up.
It'd be fantastic, you know, and it's, you know, the childhood stories are great, you know, Dad and my parents coming over on a boat. You know, they hadn't even met each other then, but they came over on the same boat, you know, on the same ship, you know. And they met in Queanbeyan, you know.
Oh, wow.
Home of the Canberra Raiders initially, and that's where they met, and I grew up in Canberra, you know, wanting to play rugby league for Australia, you know, either cricket or rugby league for Australia. That was kind of, that was my goal. It was also part of the, you know, way to get in with, you know, to be an Aussie.
Aussie,
you know,
yeah.
Play rugby league.
Yeah.
But even if you're good at that, you went in and you were just an honorary kind of Aussie for a while until after the game finished.
Then you were back.
Yeah.
Well, let's leave it there. We're going to do over two parts. So part A is going to be Andy's football career growing up in Canberra. So before we get to the post-football career, give us the Andy Burnell story from day one. Back in Canberra, how does that Canberra lad get across to Europe and play in the best leagues in the world?
It was playing junior football in Canberra, but we played everything. You know, several. So, you know, as kids years ago, for the school, you played AFL, you played rugby league, you played soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, a multitude of sports. And in the summer, little athletics, cricket, ride your bikes around. It was... For development, it was something that I think is missing today.
Yep.
You know, the ability or the opportunity to play a multitude of sports,
yeah.
And understand angles and space.
We've spoken
sports.
About that, hey,
yeah.
Seva?
Yeah.
We've literally spoken about that.
It's like they miss something.
Yeah, you know, it's like you look at rugby league, a fullback, yeah, it's kind of like a sweeper in football, covering, and, you know, Slater gets it at the back, runs it out, a bit like Zelich, you know, doing the same thing. And it's, you know, if you have the opportunity to play a lot of sports, you know, you start understanding, you know, the different spaces, the you know, you're aware of things.
Yeah.
And it makes for a better athlete, you know. Ultimately, if you want to play top-level football, you need to have a special mind, a special brain that can understand all that, but you need to physiologically be a really good specimen.
Yeah.
You know, you'll find that at the highest levels, whether it's rugby league in Australia, football in Europe, you know, at the real high end, I haven't seen a bad athlete in many different ways. Yeah. You know, some might not be as fast as others, but they'll have a magnificent VO2 max.
Yeah.
Now, like Iniesta, Busquets, and Xavi, man, these guys have got VO2 maxes of Olympic 800 and 1500 meter runners,
and just run all day.
Yes. So so that was kind of, I was able to play a lot of sport. Always wanted to play rugby league for Australia.
Yeah, okay.
Was
that growing up in Canberra? It was only the Raiders, wasn't
it?
That's pretty much.
It was the Raiders, and you kind of, the football or soccer was kind of run by migrant, you know, communities. The Italians had Juventus, the Spanish club, this and that, and you played for those teams. And I didn't join the Spanish club as such till I was maybe 15, 16, played for my local area, Belconnen, Bell South. They were a team there, and we had a Spanish coach called Cito. He was also the drummer in the Latin band on the weekend.
Oh,
so, there's no parents wanted to do the coaching anymore. So Dad goes, Dad said, well, what about Cito? He knows a bit about football. And I said, Cito, the drummer in the band. Yeah, him. So so he became our coach. And you know what? We never lost a game. We played amazing football. And his instructions were just go and play like Spain.
Yeah?
Wow.
But yeah, that was like, people ask me, like, what academy did you go to when you were a kid? None. Played rugby league, and Cito would say, go and play like Spain.
Just played football.
That was it.
Simple.
Yeah, and you then work out yourself the things that you have to do. You know, not be told all the time. Now it's like bounce, bounce, bounce. You go to a football academy and all you hear is bounce, bounce, bounce. Hit the bouncer, hit the bouncer. Bouncers are nightclubs.
Yeah.
You know, not football teams. Yeah. And it's just...
the terminology they use these days, I believe it's wrong.
It just allowed for more... you could express yourself more.
Yeah.
You could use your imagination. You had to use your imagination.
And that's when football was tough too, right?
Yes.
So you had to be tough to be playing.
Yep. It was, you know, you can't touch anyone these days.
No. You wouldn't have lasted too long these days, would you?
No. People like myself, Musket, you know, Roy Keane, would be suspended.
Yeah. You wouldn't be spending much time on a football pitch.
No, it'd be terrible. So, but it was a tough time. As well, you know, the racism was more abundant then, and especially Canberra. It was white Canberra.
Yeah, okay. Was that at school too? Did you find that hard through school and all that? Or
yeah. I don't know if it was our family in particular, because we wouldn't stay quiet and we fought back.
Okay.
So it seemed like, you know, trouble was following us everywhere.
Right.
You know, I wasn't going to cop it, and the old man certainly wasn't going to cop it.
Yeah.
So it was coming back with interest. So we seemed to always be in trouble.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know, it's changed now. It's kind of pretty cool to be European now. And we're integrated into the fabric of society, and... but it wasn't too pleasant, you know, when I was growing up.
Yeah.
But you just got on with it, you know.
Yeah, okay.
You got on with it. No one marched for us or anything like that. You got on with it, and I think it made you a stronger person, you know. And today we are where we're at, but back to the football.
Yeah.
You know, it was interwoven with, you know, athletics, carnivals and the whole sort of stuff. So it was, I always prided myself on being a good athlete, and I had to do it even more so because the book will tell you so, but I was told that I would probably never play.
I was about to ask that. Is that level. You did get told that?
Yeah, yeah. So I was born with a condition on my left knee. So by 16, 17, 18, I'd already had operations where holes were drilled into the bones. And we're talking about years ago, 30 years ago, where, you know, there's no medical science yeah. as there is now.
Yeah.
So in the book it'll tell you, I woke up, you know, early one morning and Mum had a brace on us like Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to twist the knee and bend it, you know, with steel and leather and yeah, it was one of those ones where, to be honest with you, and, you know, I probably don't use it a lot, but, you know, my career, sporting career, was on one leg. You know, there hasn't been a day where I haven't had pain with no cartilage and very little cartilage. And then by 2021, after Spain,
yeah.
I had no hyaline articular cartilage, which is the cartilage on the outer lining of the bone. So, you know, imagine doing Bathurst, yeah. you know, for 10, 11 years in a row with no brake pads and no shockers or absorbers.
Do you think that made you butt? Like, do you think that drove you even
yes,
harder?
It did.
Found that different edge to something then?
Yeah, it certainly made me a tough person to play against. You know, I didn't go out to be an enforcer or to be a real nasty guy, but I suppose I was an angry kid. You know, yeah. at the AIS, they got I think his name was Jeff Bond, who was the psychologist for Pat Cash.
Yeah,
helped Pat Cash during his Wimbledon career, and because we all met at the AIS, Pat was there as well, and you know, they sent me to see the man that fixed Pat Cash and then helped him win a Wimbledon, and he couldn't fix me, yeah. you know. And I think it was, you know, he used to say, you know, you, because I was getting a lot of red cards and yellow cards at the AOS, and I was the captain, you know, and it was kind of, it wasn't a good example for the others. And,
yeah.
You know, Jeff said, I think you seem to have a lot of anger and rage in you. And I said, well, I think I do. And he says, well, it's like you want to hurt people every tackle. You just don't want to tackle someone. You want to leave the elbow in and really, like...
hurt them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I loved watching Mark Guy and all these people. I was just like, that was like, yeah, that's the ultimate hurt. Yeah. And, you know, and I suppose it was... I remember answering him one day saying, you know, well, everyone seems to be pain-free, and I'm always like, you know... Every single day of my life is pain, training. The whole routine was play, ice, train, yeah. ice. Just a complete nightmare, and this overriding, you know, strength and desire to want to play football at the highest level in Europe, you know, is you know, it's a madness that you go through, because, you know, killing yourself every yeah. day with pain.
Yeah,
it's like, when does it end?
Yeah.
It doesn't end.
It's got to keep going.
And it keeps going, and it keeps going. And yeah, so Jeff couldn't fix me. and then from there, I was at the AIS. So Cape Town Junior Football went to the AIS, and we ended up playing in a tournament in Germany and
yeah.
Against Real Sociedad, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid.
Yep.
And that's where I was identified by Vicente del Bosque, who went on to become Spanish national team manager and Real Madrid manager.
Yep.
Played 500-600 games for Real Madrid, and he said, kiddo, you can come over and train with us and see if you like the setup and everything. And that was Real Madrid.
Yeah, so wow.
By 19...
So this was with the AIS at the time?
Yep.
You were at the AIS
yep,
at the time?
Yep. So by 19, I'd 18... I'd been identified by arguably wow. you know,
one of the
greatest,
biggest, yeah.
one of the greatest coaches to ever kind of coach and play the game,
yeah.
Who was at the club of the century. And so, yeah, I was at that level.
And you're talking 80s?
Yeah, I'm talking 80, 83, 84. Wow.
That's pretty big. That's back nice. Then, right? For
it doesn't
someone.
Happen these days.
No.
It'll probably never happen.
I don't think. I was of that ilk. Unfortunately, I had a knee that I knew then would only allow me to play for the teams and the levels that I played for and played at.
Right.
But if I had a good left knee.
Two good knees. Yeah,
I really believe I had the brain capacity and the physiological capacity to...
To mix it with it.
To play for them. So that's a torture in itself.
That must...
I would never have known that. Watching you as a kid... Yeah. I would never have known that you were carrying such an injury. Yeah. That was a bit.
And it's not like you make it up to sell a book, and it's like there's 7-8 operations.
That's
evidence there. There's 4 adductor tears right off the bone that are collateral damage from favouring a leg and this and that. And so it's a career of 10, 11, 12. Surgeries but it's a desire and a determination to,
succeed. Succeed. We talk about it with, we had Thwaitie on, right, and we were talking about it. Athletes are just wired differently, I feel, right? There's something different in them that just knows they're going to succeed, whether it's an injury or the comebacks from injuries and stuff like that, right? So obviously that's...
Well, the
brain capacity,
The wired differently is funny. I was towards the end of writing the book. I was reading up on but I also saw the documentary, the Netflix thing on Michael Jordan, The Last Dance. Yeah.
Yes.
And Phil Jackson came up, the coach of the Bulls, and talk about being wired differently. He'd gone off and done, I think was it. He'd done something. It was a type of drug or something, and he was roaring like a lion and stuff like that. And these guys go off and do maniacal things, and are still able to
come back to
do amazing things. And it's I think us athletes, we are wired differently.
I reckon
because I just to do what I did, I think I wouldn't do it again.
took too much out of you.
Yeah.
So take us back then to the OAS. So you come back from that German tour, back to Australia.
Come back from that tour.
Yeah.
And, I've got Real Madrid that would like me to go over.
Yep.
But I've got a friend of my father's at the Spanish Embassy, who's a supporter of Sporting Gijon, who at the time were top 5 in Spain.
Yeah.
Like an Inter Milan and AC Milan. They're a big club as well.
Yeah.
And they got in touch with Dad through the Spanish Embassy and said, look, he doesn't even have to come and try. Just come over and sign.
Wow.
So that was kind of... So with that, I ended up becoming the first Australian ever to sign for a La Liga club and then play in Spain.
Yeah.
Which was... that's a pretty big achievement. It's like... you go through your life and, you see other Socceroos stories and you see other sporting stories and sometimes you think yours is okay and for a long time I thought mine was pretty mediocre, but as you get older, you kind of think, wow, that's now that I've written the book and family and friends kind of look at it, it's like, who was the first Aussie to play at Wimbledon or who was the first Aussie to play in the NBA or, things like that. It's a pioneering story.
It is.
Someone has to be that pioneer. Someone has to be the one that kind of leads the way that goes through a bit of shit to allow the others to then prosper. And I don't begrudge, today's Socceroos and today's athletes making big money. It's fantastic. There's no, from my point of view, I've never been a jealous guy, nothing like that. I think it's brilliant. I just, part of my book as well is kind of to let all of them know that, that there were people that came before you that sometimes, you could afford a little bit of respect to.
Yeah.
You know.
So did you go over there on your own? Leave Australia on your own?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a bag packed and...
Yeah, funny story. What happened was in between that, I captained the Australian youth team to qualification for the Russian World Youth Cup.
Yeah.
Which I didn't end up going because the Spanish team said, well, there's a problem with FIFA and the passport situations and visas. And at the time, to play in Spain as a foreigner, if I played for Australia, would be really difficult.
Okay.
So I had to kind of go to Spain on a Spanish passport.
Right.
And but I wasn't choosing Spain or Australia. I was choosing that I wanted to play in Spain.
Play in Spain, yeah.
And my Spanish passport would allow me to do that. And the club said, well, we don't want you to go and play for Australia because then you occupy a foreigner sport here.
Right.
Which was difficult back then. The FIFA laws were a bit antiquated. And so it was just a lot easier to play in Spain on a Spanish passport. But okay. In the end, that kind of, when you read the book,
yeah.
It kind of worked out not too good either.
Right.
I got chased out by military police.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really?
Yes, really. Yeah. Yeah, because I got called up for Spanish military service too.
Because you were holding a Spanish passport.
Yeah, but they wouldn't let me play as a... So what happened in the end, because I'd already played for the Australian youth team...
Couldn't play as a Spaniard.
I couldn't play as a Spaniard.
Yeah,
because,
right.
The laws back then were a bit different. Now you've got to play for, like, the A side, the full national team. Full cap. But then it was... It was a fantastic time playing in Spain. It really was. You know, at 18, 19, I'm in first 11s at Albacete and Jerez. I'm playing against Valencia, Bilbao, Deportivo La Coruña at the Bernabéu Stadium.
Packed houses.
Yeah, in first 11s. You know, I'm 18, 19. You know, what Aussie kid does that now?
No.
It doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. Like we said before, it probably won't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. And
you're talking, Birch, back then how many foreigners?
You were allowed two foreigners. So when Gijon loaned me out, they loaned me out as a foreigner but as a defender. And it's unheard of in Italy and Spain back then. Unheard of. Because they would go, the top 40 teams in Spain would go for the best number 10 or the best number 9, the attackers.
Right.
Not defenders.
Yeah, nah. You don't want your defenders.
So do you put that down to you just having a go all the time? Like you were tough, uncompromising?
I put that down to that I was of that level.
Yeah.
But I will also, and that's what kind of tortured myself, you know, the next 10 years was that by 21, by those 72 games in Spain, you know, my knee was pretty
cooked.
Bust. Yeah, I was cooked. Yeah, there's no brake pads.
Yeah,
there's no shoulder
blocks. Yeah. And you're putting in for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I'm putting in for 90 minutes and then I can't walk for a day. You know, and it's just nightmare. And then your knee kind of like and then you get into your later years. You know, the last 2-3 years, it stiffens up, and I'd go and put a hammer to it to try and unstiffen it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want more holes drilled in.
Yeah.
So it forms scar tissue and craters in there, like the surface of the moon.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so how do I kind of straighten it a bit? Go and hit it with a hammer.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's tough.
Who hits their knee with a hammer?
Yeah.
Did it take the fun out of playing?
Like, yeah.
Did you think, oh, fuck, I've got another 90 minutes, but I've got about 3 hours?
Yeah, the last 2-3 years, I was just nicking a living. Not nicking a living in terms of that I wasn't – it was just I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
But when it came to playing 90 minutes – I gave you.
You could turn yourself on for that.
Yeah, I gave you 90 minutes. It's not difficult. You're playing an FA Cup match and you've got Roy Keane and Giggs and Canton next to you.
Yeah.
I'm giving you 90 minutes plus.
I'll go as far as you want.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
And you can't walk for a day. So I remember going home one night in England and I fell down the stairs and my mum and dad were just like,
what are you doing?
Anymore,
yeah.
And then can't walk and then... But it's what you do. Oh, I've got another 2-3 years of my contract, and
I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, and you kind of, what's ahead? You know,
what else do I do?
Yeah, so that was kind of the Spanish journey, and
so 72 games in La Liga.
In La Liga, 1 and 2,
1 and 2,
and after that, it came down to I'd been called up for Spanish military service, and. You know what? I would have done it. I would have done the Spanish military service if they let me play as a Spaniard.
Okay.
So you're going to let me play as a Spaniard and I'll do you military service. But you want me to go to war for you and you won't let me play?
Play for your country.
It's like it just – it was a matter of principle. You know, you called me out for the army and I'm Spanish to go and fight a war for you, but you won't let me play as a Spaniard in one of your teams because I've played under 20s Australia. So it was just – you know what? It broke my heart. Because to be playing at 18, 19 in all those stadiums.
Oh, mate.
You know, my mum and dad, you know, they'd seen me play at the AOS. We hadn't talked to each other for a year. You know, like cards. There was no telephones, no mobile. So these kids now get homesick.
Yeah, and FaceTime.
FaceTime. And so you're talking, you know, the first day at Gijon, wasn't a nice day, you know. You're not made welcome, but you can't call your mum, you can't text, you can't nothing.
You just go home to yourself.
Yeah, it's just...
Think about it. It's
squirrels.
It does your head in.
Yeah, it does.
And you look at it now and you know, how can you get homesick now? Kids like, got screens like that, don't you? Yeah. You talk to mum and dad.
So it's literally like they're there.
Yeah, so it was... That was a scenario, having to leave... You know, arguably one of the greatest football nations on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, when you're playing week in and week out, and
so you fled where'd you flee then? I mean, you obviously got chased out into England.
Yeah, the Spanish military police missed me by about. I'd worked it out with Dad. Dad had been in the army, and we went down to the barracks down Sevilla Way, I think it was, and he was telling the general that. This is the situation. He's prepared to do this and that. And the general goes, I don't know what the footballers are saying, but what I'm telling you is he needs to be here on this date or else he's going to a military prison for 2 years.
Wow. Wow.
So,
Far out.
So I've escaped. Escaped, and that's why kind of chapter 4, I think, or 3 or 4 is called Escape to Victory. Yeah, something like that.
That's good.
Who'd play that in the movie?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's they turned up at my grandmother's maybe a week after I'd already got
already
into London.
It was that close.
Yeah, it was... and it was customs was a bit dodgy. You're leaving. You've got a Spanish passport, and you're heading to England. And you know, I don't think technology was as advanced.
Yeah.
As
you'd
it
probably
is today.
Be caught now, right?
Yeah. You know, on computer systems now.
Gone.
Back then, it wasn't.
It was kind of stamp bang. Yep. Same getting into England.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing here? You know, what have you been doing the last 2 years? Oh, nothing. Just travelling around.
Travelling around
Europe.
Yeah, you didn't need to be a
footballer. Yes, you could get an under 20, like if you're under 23 Commonwealth citizen, they'd stamp a visa in your passport.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not for anything. It's just for part time work. So I go into London Heathrow. Yep. Bang. Part time work. Going to work in kitchens. Next minute. I'm playing for Ipswich Town.
I was about to say, you're playing for... So sign with Ipswich Town then, yeah?
That
was Notts.
Nottingham Forest. Yeah, they were two-time European champions, managed by Brian Clough, who's probably the greatest manager of all time. Britain, just... and he didn't walk into Clough's office.
Is that true, what they said about him?
He's insane.
Yeah?
Mad, yeah. Have you not seen any of
Clough? Just hearing it from straight from your mouth is
you've got to just
so they just are true.
Off.
I've heard a funny story about how Dean Saunders actually tells the story.
Oh, the Dean Saunders one's a beauty. Yeah.
What's that one about? He loves flowers or something in the garden.
Because he signed him.
He signed him.
Wanted to sign Saunders for $2.8 million.
It was a transfer fee.
Yeah. But he was pissed by 10 a.m. or something like that. So he's like, I actually can't recite the story because it's so good that you've got to watch it on YouTube. It's actually amazing. There's another one where Wimbledon first turned up with the Ghetto Blasters. Remember, they used to.
Yeah,
they turn up with the Ghetto Blasters and start playing it at the City Ground. And Cluffy's like, "What the fuck's going on next door?" So he tells the assistant Hilly to go up a couple of times. Comes back and Vinnie Jones is the captain of Wimbledon.
He's not listening.
He's getting no change. Yeah. So then eventually Cluffy goes in. And Vinny, like, knocks on the door. Vinny answers. And this time Vinny sees Cluffy. Cluffy walks straight through, grabs a ghetto blaster. Boom. Now play your fucking music, Wimbledon.
Walks out.
Okay, he was unbelievable.
And that was the first.
To Vinny Jones. Walks straight
Vinny
past
Jones.
Him.
Yep, yep. And he said, Vinny then told a teammate, a Welsh teammate that played for Forest, he goes, man, when Cluffy walked in, it's like, wow. So we were all like shitting ourselves, like, that's the man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, I have a story in there of, you know, something he said to me at halftime in a game v Derby County, you know. It was a reserves game because at the time in the position that I played, he had two England internationals, Des Walker and Neil Webb,
who
went on to play for United the next year. So, but he liked me. He liked me a lot, you know, and he, you know, I was his main man in the reserves, but, you know, and he said, I can't put you in.
Yeah.
Two England internationals ahead of you, and but I will find you a club. I'll help you.
Did he?
So, yeah. So he was the one that made the phone call to Ipswich Town, and the rest is history. I made my debut for Ipswich on his recommendation. Yeah.
Wow.
So for me, and there's a halftime tunnel pep talk that he gives me that has got nothing to do with football. Absolutely nothing to do with football.
Did you know it at the time, or did you have to decipher it?
No, well, now I look back and I start thinking, like, very, very intelligent. So for something that he offered me something at halftime and some words of he gave me some words of advice to motivate the rest of the team, and he said, I'll get you this. Do you like this? I said, yes. So for what he was offering, I gave him my world. Wow. The second half. I gave him my world.
So that's the man management side of him, yeah?
Yeah.
He knew
and the next,
individually how to get what he wanted.
And the next morning, he came in and delivered.
Did he really?
He goes, I offered you. Yeah. But instead of one, he gave me a box. I'll let you read what
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. Yeah, but it's just it was the day that I began to understand that, and he would tell me sometimes, he'd go, son, football management has got nothing to do with football.
Yep.
You know, whether it's the Panthers, whether it's Socceroos, whether it's whatever, it's, you know, it's how do you, you know, you're at Chelsea, you're at Man United, they've got 30 players on $500,000 each a week. How do you motivate them? What do you say?
You can't give them anything.
No. Like, they're all driving, so they're on $500,000 a week. They're all driving in Ferraris.
They're buying a house a week.
What do you say?
What could you give them?
Yeah. Mourinho was very good with that one, though. He, when he first took over at Chelsea, he came in with his masseur, little Portuguese bloke, you know, like the bloke on Benny Hill. Yeah. And he'd primed him up already, and he said, he said, when I go into the boys this morning, when I say who's one of you, when I ask the room who's won a European Cup to put up their hand, he goes, you and I are going to put our hands up. He goes, watch the rest of the room. So he's got Drogba, he's got all, you know, Lampard, the whole one. He goes, who's won a European Cup? Mourinho and his masseur put their hand up. Little masseur, Lampard, all of them. Not one hand came up. He goes, and Lampard, I think it was Lampard later said, it was a moment where we thought this guy had something about him. He was different.
Different.
He had those mental games that, you know, that can
get inside their heads.
Yeah, that can lead you to success. You know,
and
not all the time. It's becoming more and more difficult now. You know, even a Mourinho at Man United. You know, what do? You can't, you know, the boys are on so much money.
Mm.
You know, the board aren't going to get rid of the whole team instead of the coach.
No, that's, we'll talk about that, yeah.
Correct.
They're going to get rid of the coach first. Yeah. Right?
So it comes down to management, like Cluffy said. It's got nothing to do with football.
Nothing.
It really doesn't.
Nothing. I remember one story, he brought in an iron, you know, like an iron that you iron clothes with. And he said to Stuart Pearce, in front of all the boys, he said, you're a fraud. Stuart Pearce was captain of England at the time. He said, I watched a play midweek, and he said, you're a fraud.
Captain of England.
Captain of England. He'd played midweek, and he'd come back, and it was, I think it was Thursday. They'd had a Tuesday or Wednesday game for England. He'd flown back in, and they were all in the dressing room the day before. I think it was the day after or a couple of days after the England game. And Piercy's back from England duty, and Cluffy walks in. He says, "You're a fraud, son." And he goes, "How do you think you played?" And Piercy goes, "Yeah, I thought I did all right." He goes, "I thought you were a disaster." "Yeah, I thought you were terrible." "Yeah." And he said, "You're a fraud." Yeah. Wow. And then he says, I think Piercy said something like, "Well, why do you think I'm a fraud?" He said, "Well, I was looking at the yellow pages and you advertise that you're an electrician as well." "Okay." And he said, "Before I kind of became a pro footballer, I was an electrician and we had a family business, and now it's like Stuart Pearce's electrical business, whatever." And Cluffy goes, "So if I ring you up, do I get Stuart Pearce or I get somebody else?" He goes, "Well, you don't get Stuart Pearce. Like, it's just the business name." And he says, "Well, you're a fraud." Yeah. So he came in, and to cut a long story short, his wife's iron had bust up or some of the electrical cords, and he goes, "My wife's iron doesn't work, so so he left it there. He said, if you want to play on the weekend, that better be fixed by Saturday."
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm wondering when the iron comes.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
It
was just stories like.
But he must have owned the dressing room then, Cluffy, right? Oh. So whether you're England captain, whether you're playing reserve team football, he just owned the dressing room, didn't he?
Yeah, he, he was there with his dog. He used to walk around with this Labrador Retriever, and he either liked you or he didn't. He took to me. He liked the fact that. I'd played in Spain. You know, I told him who I'd played for, and that my coach at Albacete was a Real Madrid legend and won European Cups and played for Spain. And he kind of like, "Well, you're good enough for him, you're good enough for me, son." And he took a shining to me. And he, I think it was easy as an Aussie, you know, one of the first things he took a shining to me when he said, "Do you like cricket?"
"Oh, yeah."
And he goes, "And it better be the right answer."
Yeah.
And it was... there's a scene where I go over the River Trent and Trent Bridge is on the left, and I'm thinking about playing cricket for Australia and stuff.
And then
I go, this is what, when I was riding into training this morning, this is what I was thinking about, Gaffer. And I think he took a shining to me after that. I think he liked characters as well. He was and he was a bit nuts, and I am a little bit too. And I just think like attracts like sometimes.
Yeah.
but I didn't, But when I played, he the one thing I had, I wasn't the greatest soccerer, I wasn't the worst soccerer, but I gave you my life.
Yeah,
I gave you my world, and if someone said, "You got to mark Maradona or you got to mark him,"
you do it.
Yeah, even if they got the better of me. Yeah, they'd remember Andy for life.
So let's take, before we go to Sydney Olympic and those Socceroos caps, Redding, captained Redding?
Yes, well, I, after Forest, I left Forest because Cluffy had recommended me to Ipswich.
Yeah, to Ipswich, yeah.
So I went there, and I got in the first team eventually, and got offered a 3-year deal, went home, and then, as it happens, got deported. I went back to England looking at a new 3-year deal that I'd been offered, and ended up being deported. At Heathrow Airport for having played the previous year at Ipswich on that invalid visa, or the visa that I wasn't supposed to be playing on.
Right.
Yeah, so, there's deportations in here, there's escaping from Spanish military, the whole lot. So
certainly a movie.
So in a way, it's kind of... I probably missed, 200-300 games in England because of visa problems.
Right.
It's disheartening at times, but it happened. And then you come back and that's when I came back to play for Sydney Olympic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it was kind of like the end of my world. My knee was bust anyway. And I just thought, it was the league I never wanted to play in.
Okay.
I'd left Australia and I'd come back to the old NSL, and then I just thought, you know, I'd lived Spanish football at 18, 19, you know, playing in the biggest stadiums on the planet, full houses. And, you know, you're back at, you know, you're training at Little Bay, Long Bay Jail. Yeah. Prisoners are catching the balls to go over the, you know, shooting drills.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just, it was one of those scenarios where it just led to me wanting to do other things. You know, I got into acting, I got into this, I got into a multitude of things that, that when you read that, you think, wow.
Yeah, right.
This guy's like, yeah, I suppose I never fell out of love with football, but I fell out of love with the standard of professionalism that wasn't here.
Okay.
Or yeah, that I wanted to be here. You know, and teams like Marconi and Olympic were, you know, were pushing the boundaries of getting towards more professional. But it still was way, way behind what I'd experienced. And, you know, again, the torture of knowing that, you know, I should be playing, you know, I'd come back because I'd not been able to get a new visa to play in England. And I'm watching guys that I was keeping out of the Ipswich Town team playing in an FA Cup.
Yeah, that's...
Playing against Man United on the weekend, you know, and we've got Heidelberg away and then, you know, you know, Melita Eagles in front of, you know, 300. You know, just, which, on a hot summer's day, it's 42 degrees.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, it must...
Yeah. It's madness, isn't it?
Oh.
It's like... So that, and I'd sit at home. Seriously, I'd sit at home and I'd go... I think I'm going to trial with the Roosters. I'm going to go down to the Roosters, play fullback for them. Or go and try and get down to Redfern Oval. Because I was actually a better rugby league player as a kid than soccer player.
Football.
Dead set.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That came a lot easier. And, you know, if you've got the football intelligence and that, you know, it was like I was doing round the corner kicks before, you know, while Meninga and Cronin were still doing toe punts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were doing round the corners, weren't we? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chip and chase and thirst and dummy passes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that came easier and I just thought, but then I thought, nah, go down there. Well, first tackle on my knee. You know,
yeah, I'm out.
Gone, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The football I could put up with a bit.
Yeah.
But league, and in those days...
Yeah. Tough, mate.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Like, now they're protected species and it's still tough.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
that's
but,
right.
But back then, wow. You know, when Mark and these guys played, man, that was like...
So you just didn't enjoy Sydney Olympic? Like, you obviously enjoyed it, right?
Look,
the football side of it?
We won a National Soccer League grand final. You know, we played one against Marconi and lost the first one and then won the second one. And you know what? Those days were wonderful and memorable occasions. You know, full houses at Parramatta Stadium. Yeah, you know, moments, you know, that you cherish forever. But, you know, the almost, you know, the love of the game started leaving a little bit in terms of I didn't want to watch English football anymore, you know.
Mm.
And it was at the time where SBS was starting to become prominent. They'd play all the Serie A games, the Italian games and this and that. And everyone was going mad about, like, wanting to watch, you know, the Italian football,
yeah,
on a
Juventus
Sunday morning and the Spanish football and the, yeah, English football. You know, and I just couldn't think of anything worse.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. Just didn't want nothing to do with it. So it was just turn up, play, pick up your wages and you know, and then I became a ranger at Wallara Council. So, yeah. So amongst other things, yeah, I went off to acting school in Los Angeles and...
Okay.
And the riots went off, remember that?
Yeah.
So, there was a million things that, while playing football, that I tried to do. I wanted to be on The Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, that's it. Well, to be an actor. And I couldn't get a green card to the USA, so it was like that. My whole life's been a frustrated journey of bureaucratic red tape, you know, at immigration counters.
Right.
So there you go.
So take us into who would be the toughest footballers you've played to get or had to mark then? I know it's probably a hard question because...
Not really. There's three or four very special players, you know, that I've been blessed to have shared the same pitch with, you know, and to have marked people of the quality of Gabriel Batistuta,
yeah,
for Argentina. There was a guy called Redondo for Argentina. These guys were, like, the best of the best, you know, just really, really special players. Batistuta was Serie A.
It took you 90 minutes too. You were playing the whole time.
Redondo was a legend as well. And they were playing for Argentina at a time when Maradona was suspended at the time because of the drug use or whatever. So they were two fantastic players. But Roy Keane, there's another one. Just, man, what a machine.
Tough as nails,
but a motivator of men, a leader of men. No one was left behind, but you had to go with him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he made everyone better.
Yeah, and there was no room for, there was no second best room. You know, he led the way by showing the way. It was like that. But I played against that Manchester United team in an FA Cup. I think it was round 3 or 4 or something. And marking Andy Cole, very special English international. Wow. Ryan Giggs, Eric Cantona. For Chelsea, Gianfranco Zola.
Zola, yeah.
Vialli, Hullet. Marcel Desailly. I've said to my wife a few times, the accolades you get in football and things that people say to you over time and what you've won, what you haven't won, and sometimes little things like the greatest accolade someone's ever said was Zola, Desailly and Leboeuf came up to me after we played Chelsea and they said, you should have been with us.
Really?
Yeah, so...
Wow.
That's
pretty good. Make you feel good, yeah, right? Especially talking about it now, brings back...
Well, now it's kind of like, all the kind of bad injuries and everything that you... Like that now is kind of... It's a special thing. They're not monkey players. They're very special... the best of the best, and they say you should have been with us today.
Wow.
So it's the little things like that that even mean more than maybe a medal or something sometimes. Yeah.
You can put your head down on the pillow and know that those blokes
they'll
win a game.
Yeah.
Who wins the World Cup?
Yeah, that's kind of the respect that kind of you try and afford to people and that you'd like back. So there you go. There's a nice little thing.
Now, your Socceroos caps, that must make you pretty proud as well.
Yes, it does. But again, it's one of those things that, in the end, it was 21 appearances, 21 Socceroos appearances. But, it kind of, I'm a little over the I should have got 100 appearances or 50 or 20 because it seems a little bit ungrateful. Some people dream of just having one.
Yeah, getting one cap.
Yeah, some people, one cap, be their dream, and here I'm whinging. I only got, but it is what it is. I probably did miss 50, 60 caps, at certain times. I got injured before England were going to come out the week before I was in the team and got injured. Remember, Durakovic came in and 60 caps later he was still there. That's what happens. Yeah. You play for your nation, Australia, one time. It's a great honour. It's a great achievement. I suppose if anyone can say they maybe should have got more, I'm in that position to say it. But, I look fondly back on it. But more in a pioneering type way.
Yeah, certainly played with some good players there. Played for Australia, right?
Played with some very good players. And, the teams I played in with Tobin, Ivanovic and people like this and Ocon, Bozza, all these guys, we...
should have qualified for a World Cup, right? That's disappointing. Yeah.
We should have, but we were always tied into that South American group, so it was always going to be difficult, very difficult. Like for example,
they made it so hard for us in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean the one that I was injured for, where the boys lost to Argentina home and away. Remember at Maradona came back from there.
Yes,
I mean. Very difficult, to beat Argentina. And back in those days, like, the Golden Generation team that beat Uruguay that I was a scout for, which we'll talk about later.
We've got that in part three.
Frank Lowy was flying them in Qantas, special planes in and out.
Yeah,
If I tell you our trips, man.
Cattle class, is that what we're talking about?
It's 52 hours to get to Buenos Aires once. 52 hours on Aerolíneas Argentinas. I think it was the cheapest flight, like, available. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people were sleeping under the seats. It was a nightmare. And you get off the plane and you're marking Batistuta and Canigia, and you still got jet lag.
Please, yeah, cramping up early.
Yeah, there's the two top goal scorers in Italy. Serie A. We're playing for Sydney Olympic and Marconi. 52-hour flight. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
It's a good story, but, you know.
The thing is, he's lived it. This is living
through. Yeah, and it's a pioneering story.
That's a great word, the pioneering story. Yeah. It's a great word, pioneer,
because
right?
Because it's, I kind of get that kind of reward and satisfaction now that, you see the national teams, doing well or qualifying like the 2006.
And that does give you satisfaction?
It kind of says, we went through a little bit, for them to be able to play in that France World Cup, to play in the Germany World Cup. Now our footballers is, we're stumbling a little bit now. We're going back the other way, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully not, but so we all, I think everyone has their own soccer journey, their own football journey.
Very true.
This young man here, he could have been AC Milan, Juventus, but things, sometimes the face doesn't fit, sometimes, the wrong decision, the wrong management at times, Dan will tell you, he was beating Vieri's, goal scoring records, and he's humble enough not to bang on about it, but he was a very special talent, and he was so much so that I took him to Millwall when Timmy Cahill was there, and he did well, but it depends when you go to a club, if they've got another striker, timing. Your face doesn't fit.
We talk about that. Yeah.
Timing is, to be honest, I think I've got more luck away from football.
After football.
I mean? You just keep hitting, you go, wow, I wish I had that luck.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably similar to you, but, right, with all the bureaucrat stuff, bureaucracy that happened to you, it's timing, right?
Well, it is timing, and it's, it would have been different in today's. I mean, with the European Union and Euro passports and, most teams in England are non-English players, a lot of them, it's so different now. But it was what it was. It is what it is. You can chop it up how you want, this book, My Life, and smoke it however you want. it is what it is.
We won't be doing that. We can't wait to read it.
We all, I think as you get older, you kind of start understanding the journey you've been through, and working out, maybe why.
Does your football? Are you satisfied with your football career? Then, do you think you? You talk about your knee. You talk about obviously the bureaucracy. Yeah. Are you satisfied? Sitting back now,
it sounds like you've squeezed the most you could.
Yeah. Spot on.
What do you reckon?
Spot on. Yeah, with the restrictions, with the knee, with the the medical part of it.
Yeah.
The whole kind of pioneering bit 35 years ago, the bureaucracy of FIFA, of visas. Yeah. When you're a kid in Canberra, and you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and you're getting up and you're watching FA Cups and you're watching Craig Johnson play at Wembley Stadium, and you then do that. You play at Wembley Stadium, you play against Manchester United.
Yeah, so you've got to be satisfied with that, right?
You go, Leeds United. You go to Leeds United, Ellen Road. When I was a kid, I used to
watch it.
I used to nick a shoot magazine from the news agency to get the poster and put it up on the wall. Leeds United.
Yeah.
Man, they were guns, 1960s. And then I end up playing with the son of one of them at Reading. Stuart Gray, his dad was Eddie Gray, a legend of Leeds United. And you play these famous, at Arsenal.
All the famous stadiums,
Those sort of places. That for me, the day Beckham signed his contract, at the Bernabeu, we were in this with the president. There's only a select few, there's 5, 6 people in there.
Yeah. And don't forget, Bert, 20 caps for Australia. I'm not just thinking about that. I'm talking about going into camps. You know what I mean? Like 20 camps, that's a lot. Like it's a massive achievement. It is.
It is. Yeah, it is. I'm not going to be negative about it. It's a beautiful thing, a beautiful achievement.
It's a boy from Canberra, right? Yeah. That was obviously rugby league was the only thing in Canberra at the time. And look what you've done.
Yeah. So it's I look at it now, and it's a special achievement. And like I was going to say before, some people get one cap, some people get 50, some people get 100. Greater internationals than me have had more and less. Yeah. What I'm most proud of is the thing you can't take away from, you know, from history, from facts, is firsts.
Yeah.
Things that are firsts.
Spain.
So, first Aussie to play in Spain. The first Aussie to play in both Spain and England. Arguably the two greatest nations on the planet. Yeah, for football, most kind of attractive that everybody kind of wants to play it. Italy comes in as well. Yeah. So, before Aloisi, before Vidmar, before Ryan, Kiko Andy did it.
Yeah. You know, a kid from Canberra.
Yeah, yeah. The first Australian to captain an English club.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Marston medal, you know.
Yeah.
He played for Preston North End. Yeah. First guy to play in, Aussie to play in England. You know, these are big things. You know, I was the first Aussie to captain a signing before Viduca, Kuhl, you know, all these boys, Timmy. So for me, I kind of want to tell that a little bit in the book as well, not on an egotistical level, but I think as society we're losing track of our history.
Yeah,
of,
definitely.
Of as a kid, when I was a kid, you know, history of rugby league, you know, like, you know, you can't talk to anyone now about, they wouldn't know about, you know, Parramatta Manly rivalry in rugby league years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I could name you all the players.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Price, Sterling, the whole lot, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if it's a society now that the kids kind of don't need it because they just go, Siri, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's, so you don't look at history, they don't study history.
It's true.
Mike Tyson, no, he said, studied the whole lot, didn't he?
Yeah, that's it.
What do you reckon before we cap it off?
Yep.
Got something to show you, Birch.
We have something for you, Birch.
Just see if I can bring this up.
Look how good Sever is. Look at this.
All right, are you ready? Oh, man.
Wow.
Hello, Birchie. How are you, brother? MG, mate. Boys tell me you're on their podcast tonight. Awesome. I want a copy of your book too when it comes out. I heard it's fucking awesome. Have a great time with the boys tonight and hopefully catch up soon for a couple of drinks, maybe a few.
Wow.
Stay random, Andy. Bye-bye.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
So that's where the podcast started in his gym. And here we are talking to...
I mean, He's a legend.
Yeah.
You know, he's a legend of the Panthers, of rugby league in Australia, you know, state of origin. You know, who can forget his little rumble with the King?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of embedded in my mind for years. No, that's, man, you've made my evening. And Mark's, MG, this book is for you, my man. I'll have it signed for you with a special message inside and... you're certainly someone that, even though we're around the same age, you inspired me, you empowered me, and I suppose it's a little bit of liking. You're a warrior of the highest order, mate, so much respect. Thank you.
Thanks to MG. Now, that wraps up part A with Andy Burnell. Andy, thank you for giving your football career. And if you don't mind hanging around, we'll dig into that post-football career, if you don't mind.
Perfect.
This podcast can't happen without our wonderful sponsors. So if you need any NBN or mobile needs, visit letsbemates.com.au. If you need any legal advice, call Ignify Legal, buying or selling your property and needing expert legal advice, contact Ian and the team on 8823-3309. And MG Active. Birch, as you can see, still keeping Sever in shape. Look at him. Looks like he can still play, can't he?
Yep.
Go down and see MG and Logs at MG Active. DS Tipping and Excavations. Still the best lay in Penrith, or are we going in Sydney?
No, Australia.
Yeah, if you need any turf laid or excavation needs, give Daniel Severino a call. And Jeff Lambert. If you need a podcast like ours done, look what Jeff can do for us. So visit jefflambert.com.au. Little Paper Boat Supply Company, if you need any beanies, anything like that. He did our logo. He can do anything you want. So visit Matty Clark at Little Paper Boat on all the socials. And we'll be back with Part B, Seva.
Yep, thanks for that, guys.
Thank you.